Chapter 11. After this crisis, Morris became a man. Hitherto, if human beings can be estimated, he had not been worth anyone's affection, but conventional, petty, treacherous to others, because to himself. Now he had the highest gift to offer. The idealism and the brutality that ran through boyhood had joined at last and twined into love. No one might want such love, but he could not feel ashamed of it, because it was he, neither body or soul, nor body and soul, but he working through both. He still suffered, yet a sense of triumph had come elsewhere. Pain had shown him a niche behind the world's judgments, whither he could withdraw. There was still much to learn, and years passed before he explored certain abysses in his being, horrible enough they were. But he discovered the method and looked no more at scratches in the sand. He had awoken too late for happiness, but not for strength, and could feel an austere joy as of a warrior who is homeless but stands fully armed. As the term went on, he decided to speak to Durham. He valued words highly, having so lately discovered them. Why should he suffer and cause his friend suffering, when words might put all right? He heard himself saying, "I really love you as you love me," and Durham replying, "Is that so? Then I forgive you." And to the ardour of youth, such a conversation seemed possible, though somehow he did not conceive it as leading to joy. He made several attempts, but partly through his own shyness, partly through Durham's, they failed. If he went round, the door was sported, or else there were people inside. Should he enter, Durham left when the other guests did. He invited him to meals. He could never come. He offered to lift him again for tennis, but an excuse was made. Even if they met in the court, Durham would affect to have forgotten something and run past him or away. He was surprised their friends did not notice the change, but few undergraduates are observant. They have too much to discover within themselves, and it was a don who remarked that Durham had stopped honeymooning with that Hall person. He found his opportunity after a debating society to which both belonged. Durham, pleading his tripos, had sent in his resignation, but had begged that the society might meet in his rooms first, as he wished to take his share of hospitality. This was like him. He hated to be under an obligation to anyone. Morris went and sat through a tedious evening. When everyone, including the host, surged out into the fresh air, he remained, thinking of the first night he had visited that room, and wondering whether the past cannot return. Durham entered, and did not at once see who it was. Ignoring him utterly, he proceeded to tidy up for the night. "You're beastly hard," blurted Morris. "You don't know what it is to have a mind in a mess, and it makes you very hard." Durham shook his head as one who refuses to listen. He looked so ill that Morris had a wild desire to catch hold of him. "You might give me a chance instead of avoiding me. I only want to discuss..." "We've discussed the whole evening. I mean the symposium. Like the ancient Greeks." "Oh, Hall, don't be so stupid. You ought to know that to be alone with you hurts me. No, please, don't reopen. It's over. It's over." He went into the other room and began to undress. "Forgive this discursive, but I simply can't. My nerves are all know-how after 3 weeks of this." "So are mine," cried Morris. "Poor, poor chap. Durham, I'm in hell." "Oh, you'll get out. It's only the hell of disgust. You've never done anything to be ashamed of, so you don't know what's really hell." Morris gave a cry of pain. It was so unmistakable that Durham, who was about to close the door between them, said, "Very well, I'll discuss if you like. What's the matter? You appear to want to apologize about something. Why? You behave as if I'm annoyed with you. What have you done wrong? You've been thoroughly decent from first to last." In vain, he protested. "So decent that I mistook your ordinary friendliness. When you were so good to me, above all the afternoon I came up. I thought it was something else. I'm more sorry than I can ever say. I had no right to move out of my books and music, which was what I did when I met you. You won't want my apology any more than anything else I could give, but, Hall, I do make it most sincerely. It is a lasting grief to have insulted you." His voice was feeble but clear, and his face like a sword. Morris flung useless words about love. "That's all, I think. Get married quickly and forget. Durham, I love you." He laughed bitterly. "I do. I have always. Good night. Good night. I tell you, I do. I came to say it in your very own way. I have always been like the Greeks, and didn't know. Expand the statement. Words deserted him immediately. He could only speak when he was not asked to.
Hall, don't be grotesque. He raised his hand, for Morris had exclaimed, It's like the very decent fellow you are to comfort me, but there are limits, one or two things I can't swallow.
I'm not grotesque.
I shouldn't have said that, so do leave me. I'm thankful it's into your hands I fell. Most men would have reported me to the Dean or the police.
Oh, go to hell. It's all you're fit for, cried Morris, rushed into the court and heard once more the bang of the outer door. Furious, he stood on the bridge in a night that resembled the first, drizzly with faint stars. He made no allowance for 3 weeks of torture, unlike his own, or for the poison which, secreted by one man, acts differently on another. He was enraged not to find his friend as he had left him. 12 o'clock struck. 1, 2, and he was still planning what to say, when there is nothing to say, and the resources of speech are ended. Then savage, reckless, drenched with the rain, he saw in the first glimmer of dawn the window of Durham's room, and his heart leapt alive and shook him to pieces. It cried, You love and are loved. He looked round the court. It cried, You are strong, he weak and alone, won over his will. Terrified at what he must do, he caught hold of the mullion and sprang. Morris! As he alighted, his name had been called out of dreams. The violence went out of his heart, and the purity that he had never imagined dwelt there instead. His friend had called him. He stood for a moment, entranced. Then the new emotion found him words, and laying his hand very gently upon the pillows, he answered, Clive.